Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode in our All In on Offense series, and joining me today on the podcast is the offensive coordinator at Minnesota State, the 2019 Football Scoop Coordinator of the Year for Division II, Joe Bishoner. Joe, it's great to have you here.
I appreciate you guys having me on the podcast. You know, our season was a really fun season. Have a lot of good players that helped us, you know, have a lot of success.
Definitely. And Coach Bishoner's been on the podcast before, and we got to know him a little bit, and we'll put a link to that episode so you can learn a little bit more about his background. Today we're going to dive into some topics on offense that they've done pretty well with, one of those being the quarterback run game. We'll talk a little bit of RPO. And, you know, Coach, before we got started, you made the point that, you know, you're at a place, you're playing football in Minnesota, and you got to run the ball. That has to be part of what you're going to do, just because there's going to be those games where the conditions really are going to not be very well suited for the pass.
Yeah, you know, it's obviously we're in Minnesota, the upper Midwest. We play on a natural grass field, so the elements do, you know, come into account with what we're doing offensively. And you got to be able to run the football. You know, there's days that it's going to be snowing, it's going to be windy, it's going to be raining, you're out in the elements, and just that added element makes it even more difficult to throw the football. So, you know, we always believe in running the football. You got to run the ball to win. You got to stop the ball. You got to stop the run. You know, it's a line of scrimmage game. It always has been. It always will. So we got to do a great job up front. And that's kind of where, you know, we've done some things running the quarterback because, yeah, you have to run the football, but you got to get guys out of the box and you got to play with plus one. And it just helps alleviate some of the headaches from trying to get the unblocked players as far away from the point of attack as we're going.
And Coach, you know, that being said, you certainly have the ability to grind it out, but you guys put up a lot of yards. You were number four in the country at 517.7 a game. You were the number one scoring team in the country at 47.5 per game. So just because you run the ball doesn't mean that you're not going to see the production that you might think is reserved for the air raid type of offenses.
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate to, like we talked about earlier, you know, having good players makes you look really smart. We're a lot better coaches when we have really, you know, smart, talented football players. And we were very fortunate to have that this past season. And, you know, I think it is still our job as coaches to put our best guys out there, put them in the best possible situation to be successful. We give them the least amount of information necessary to be successful. We want them to play football, not think football. And ultimately, you know, give them the ball in a good situation and let them, for lack of a better term, run with it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Coach, before we dig into some of the specifics, I guess, if you would just give us an overview of, I guess, the philosophy or the things you believe that, you know, you're really building this offense upon.
Yeah, we talk about, you know, and we said this in our first one, attitude and effort, the only two things you control in your life. From there, we talk about people, because ultimately football is about people, putting the best people out there, giving them the tools and the resources necessary to be successful on the field, teaching them how to use the tools and resources, when to use the tools and resources, and then let them go do their jobs. From there, you know, we talk about players, plays, and formations. So who are our players? Where are we going to put them? You know, what type of plays are we going to use them to utilize their skill set, right? And that's how we kind of build what we do. We have our, you know, our run pillars. We talk about our inside zones, our outside zones, our gap schemes, our insertion schemes, you know, and then our pass pillars. We talk protection first, whether it's, you know, bob protection or bob slide protection, pull slide protection, sprint out protection. Obviously, we have our play action passes off of our run games. We try to hold them as, keep them as similar as possible so we can eliminate some of the teaching. You know, we have our screen game, and then we'll build the routes, the concepts from there after we've talked about protection. Then we talk about different types of tempos, what kind of tempos we're going to utilize within our offense, you know, whether we huddle, you know, no huddle, you know, you do your your one-word trigger plays and your two-minute tempo. And we talk a lot about what kind of style we play with. And I don't mean, you know, your sweet towel and your Under Armour stuff. I'm talking about your, you know, how we prepare, how we practice, how we play through the echo of the whistle, how we take care of ourselves, how we study, all those types of things are our style, you know, how we break the huddle, how we get to the line of scrimmage. And that's more substance than what I'm wearing or how I look. Now, you put those two things together and it helps. But that's kind of, and then ultimately, we're doing all those things the right way that will lead us to the result that we want. Throughout the week, throughout the year, it's kind of an all-the-time thing.
Well, Coach, let's dig into some of your run game here. And I know you said you get asked quite a bit about the quarterback run game. And certainly, as you mentioned, you know, with a spread type of offense, even at a place like Minnesota on the natural grass in bad conditions, it's still an advantage to pull people out of the box. And now when you can make that quarterback, the ball carrier, you can get some advantages there, even a plus one.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, a math guy by any means, but when we turn around, we hand the ball off, or we, you know, hand the ball to the running back, we're really ultimately playing with nine. You know, the guy who's got the ball, and then the quarterback, we can try to have the quarterback account for somebody, whether it's, you know, a read play, a boot off the handoff, whatever it might be. You're trying to hold somebody with the quarterback. Ultimately, the running back has the ball, so you're playing with nine. So we want to be smart about when we run the quarterback, obviously. But when we're playing with the quarterback, now you can play with 10. Now you can make the defender make a decision, and now you can start to, you know, even the playing field per se. And then, and like you had said before, if we can open up our formations, make them defend, you know, all, the whole 53 and a third, now we can even the playing field even more. Because ultimately, you start getting in 12, 13 personnel. That's great, you know, if you're better than they are, and you've got some things to hold people. But those safeties start to creep down. And when you're not in a situation where you can always win one-on-one in the perimeter, or the conditions don't allow for that, what are we going to do to still effectively run the football? And that's where we've done some things running the quarterback. And we're pretty fortunate here that we've got two guys, or last season we had two guys, I feel like we will in the future as well, that can handle that load. As far as being able to run the football, and that allows us the freedom to be able to do that. And I know because some people are like, wow, if we run the quarterback, he gets hurt. You know, he's the only guy we got. I totally understand that as well. We've been fortunate. We've got a couple guys that are able to do that.
Hey, Coach, let's get into some of the specifics here. And I know in your quarterback run game, it's probably going to be all of your schemes. You know, do you guys run your zone schemes, your gap schemes, all of those with your quarterback? Is it the full, I guess, menu of runs for him?
Yeah, we everything that we'll do with a running back, we can do with a quarterback, and we can even do it with a receiver as well. So it helps us kind of be diverse that way, and it doesn't change anything for our guys up front. I mean, it adds a little bit of understanding by our running backs as far as, you know, who's the kick out guy, who's the insert player, who are we going on zone, those types of things. So they have to be, they do some hybrid learning like a lot of what a tight end would do. So that's probably the biggest thing when you're adding the element of the quarterback run game is utilizing the tailback. You know, sometimes it's a lead blocker, sometimes it's misdirection. But that's, I think, where the teaching goes in for the running back, and then the teaching goes in for the quarterback as far as what his footwork's going to be, what his reads are. That's an element of that as well. But for the most part, that's stuff that's pretty natural to those guys.
So, Coach, for, I guess, the purposes of understanding the structure, what does a run call sound like when you're going to use the quarterback? How does it differ from when it's the running back?
Without giving away all of our secrets, so we would call the play, and then we would tag it with quarterback. It's pretty simple. Or we would have, you know, if we're doing it out of a, you know, a no huddle situation, we might have another trigger term that lets everybody know the quarterback's running it. Or this, you know, the quarterback will just tell the tailback. He's the only one who really needs to know.
So, Coach, let's take a look at your gap schemes and talk us through how you're going to coach those up in the quarterback run game and some of the things you like to do. Because I think once you have that gap scheme in, I mean, it could take on all kinds of different personalities, whether you're, you know, using a jet sweep with it or misdirection or whatever it might be. So I guess let's just start with the scheme first and talk us through how you're coaching that up.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think the gap scheme is the one that you can be the most dynamic and diverse with. For us, when we're teaching our gap schemes, whether it's the quarterback run, you know, or we're just handing it off to a running back or a receiver, you know, we talk gap down double. So we're going to kick out the first man outside our in man. And we call our in man the guy, the last guy in the line of scrimmage with his hand in the ground. It doesn't, you know, if we have a H or a tight end who's in a 2-point stance, kind of nested on the tackle or lined up as a wing per se, he is not considered the in man. So for us, we define the in man, like I said, was the last guy in the line of scrimmage with his hand in the ground. So, you know, we talk gap down double, from the point of attack back, kicking out the first man outside our in man. If there's a guy in my gap, I'm going to back block on him. If there's nobody on my gap, then I am going to double team with my adjacent offensive lineman and or tight end to the backside linebacker. We're pulling the backside guard for the play side inside linebacker. So that's how we're talking. That's how we base. That's the base rules of our gap schemes. You know, our backside tackle is going to hinge, you know, give the guard or the center time on the back block, you know, specifically if he's got a 3 or a 4, and then he's going to take anything coming off the C gap. We have a backside tight end on there. You know, they're going to communicate, and one of those guys is going to climb, or he can take the backside edge pressure, whatever that might happen. So then our ball carrier is going to either receive the snap, what would be the quarterback, you know, he's going to drop and pause, or the running back, you know, if he's we're in the under center, or in the gun or the pistol, our footwork's similar. He's going to drop step, pause, because we want to allow that center, or excuse me, the guard, we want to get him this inside hip. So we got to give him time to pull so we can get in the inside hip and make that read.
And are you guys looking to hit this in the A gap on out, or what's the typical aim point you'd like?
For the running back, the aiming point, we don't really give him necessarily a hard, fast rule on the aiming point. We want to be on the inside hip of the guard and let that guy take it in daylight. We will usually hit this thing outside. It's a long power. It's not necessarily your A-gap to A-gap power. It's a little bit wider than that. We want to, you know, obviously, if we're running into a tight end, it's going to hit outside the tight end. If there's a big space, you know, between the 3 technique and the 6 or whatever it is that we're blocking down on, you know, we'll try to ram that thing up in there, and we'll have that guard blow through. You know, if he's got daylight, he's going to take it, pulling guard.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, too, with the way you're looking at it, you know, you mentioned the rules here, and they're pretty simple. I would think, you know, like the way we taught it, you know, it was all about making sure you had, you know, all the gaps covered, right? Everybody's got a gap, basically. So do you see a ton of, you know, I know the creepers, the sim pressures, people like to put up the 6-man front and drop people out and try to mess with you a little bit as far as your schemes. Really, you know, when you're using something like this, the rules should help you regardless of what kind of look you're going to see or even what kind of movement.
Yeah, I think that the way that we've simplified it has helped our kids just play fast, right? Like you said, we're going to gap down it. If there's a guy in your gap, go back on it. If there's not, you're either going to double team with your adjacent buddy to the backside linebacker, or you're going to climb to a level 2 defender, and you're going to stay on that angle. You know, we talk about being a train on the tracks, man. You're not coming off the tracks to go chase something, but if something comes through on your track, you know, take it out. We want to make sure that we're just doing a great job of washing everything down and getting great movement at the point of attack.
Now, for your double teams, what are the coaching points for your guys? I know when we would run it, you know, run that deuce block, I mean, we really wanted those guys to get some movement and you know, make a dent in that defense where we'd be able to run the football. But to do that, you know, it's you got to stay on that double and have eyes for where the other guy's going to come off. So coach us through that double team you guys are teaching.
Yeah, I heard a really good point at this clinic last week. He goes, you know, when we have a one-on-one block, we want to get movement, right? We want to move the guy. We want to sustain the block. But if offensively, if we're going to commit two guys to one of your defensive guys, we better obliterate that. You know, you better more than dent the front. You better crash it. We talk with our guys about getting 600 pounds on 300 pounds. But the coaching point is you know, we've got the lead guy and the guy who's going to step over. So if I'm a guard and I have a three technique, right, he's the lead guy. He's obviously going to keep his eyes in the gap, but he's the one who's covered. So then our tackle is going to step over and get knee-to-knee, hip-to-hip, shoulder-to-shoulder with the guard. Obviously, we've got four eyes on the backside linebacker, two hands, two knees, two pads on the three technique, and we want to get that guy vertical, and we want to deposit him in the lap of the backside linebacker. Ultimately, we want to make that guy have to run all the way over the top. If he runs through, you know, the guard's going to come off on him. We want him to run all the way over the top, and if we've made him do that, then we know that we've gotten production on the run play because we're banking on the fact that we're going to get great vertical movement on that three technique per se.
You know, another key component then is the kickout block. Talk us through the coaching points on that, because that's something now if you're going quarterback run game, I imagine your running back's going to be doing a little bit of that.
Yeah, we'll use the running back as the kickout player. We'll utilize a wing if we're in 12 personnel as a kickout player. Maybe obviously use the running back with decoy motion or like decoy jet. Or now the wing's the kickout. The running back's going to insert for some cover gap for the bonus player. But when it's the running back as the kickout player, we talk that our aiming point is going to be the outside leg of the guard. Okay, and I know that's really, really tight, but that allowed that we overemphasize that aiming point to make sure that we're going to get inside out on the first man outside our in man. If it's a nine technique outside the tight end, that puts us in a great position to, we call it a J path. We're working vertical, and then working that J path to kick out the in man, first man outside our in man, and we really want to zipper that thing up and get our, if we're running it to the right. And the running back's on the right side, and he's kicking out the right defensive end or nine technique. We want to have our left shoulder, our left hip, scrape tight off the guard, off the tackle, off the tight end, so we can always work for the kick out. And we talk about no matter if it's our running back, no matter if it's our tight end, fullback, whatever it might be, we're always preaching to get it kicked out. We know that 90% of the teams that we're going to play are going to spill it. But if we do a great job working for the kick out, then that spill is not going to happen in the backfield because penetration will pick off your guard, muddle it all up, and then you're in a world of hurt. So we're always working for that kick out. So that's important, that aiming point for the running back, for the J or fullback. That's why we keep it so tight.
And, I know we're talking about power here, but for you in your gap scheme package, you're going to include, obviously, counter, and then you also include pin and pull in that as well. So let's handle the counter first. Talk us through, I guess, just the things that change, because it really, there's a lot of carryover play to play, but the key coaching points is, as far as the things that change if you're going to run a counter.
Yeah, we run, people call it GF counter, or we have the guard and the fullback, or guard and wing. We're not a counter trade team. I think there can be some more dynamics with that. But for us, it's gap down double. The base philosophy is the exact same. Now, the guard is going to be the person who kicks out. So now he's going to be an open puller, and we teach it the finish the same way that we teach the running back and or the wing when they're the kickout player on power. You know, our aiming point is the outside leg of the play side guard, and we want to, you know, for lack of a better term, scrape paint with your hip and your shoulder on the backside of the offensive line, because we're going to bank on that. We do a great job getting movement up front. We're going to dent the front. So we have to make sure that we're at an angle as we're going to kick this thing out, so there's no air between us and the defender. You know, we're talking about getting our outside shoulder on the inside of the defender to get it kicked out, running your feet on contact, you know, near foot, near shoulder. And then our backside wing or running back is pulling for the play side inside linebacker. I think one of the key elements is understanding who your guys are and where their alignments are, and understanding that the backside wing on counter is faster than the guard. So messing with his alignment, maybe he takes a jab step, maybe he gets a little bit deeper, helps with your timing with the running back getting in the inside hip of the puller like he did on power.
And then, as I mentioned, pin and pull is part of the gap scheme package for you. And a lot of that, you know, we used it the same way in our thought process, and we ran a lot of power and counter. But, you know, if we were seeing teams that were just really working hard at spilling us, or they'd give us a, you know, a 6-eye or 7 technique on our tight end who was on the line of scrimmage, you know, our answer was, that's fine. We'll go pin and pull and then make you get back out wider and now come back with the power. So that was kind of our mentality. How's it work for you? What's the mentality of using that? When do you like to use it?
I'm exactly the same way. You know, when we have to make sure that we do a great job giving the defense, you know, different looks, but making sure it's very similar for our guys. So when we teach pin and pull, you know, obviously we don't love it versus a 9 technique. We have an answer when there's a 9 technique as far as still being able to run the play. It's not ideal. Sometimes you just have to do it. But for us, when we talk pin and pull, it's in our gap scheme, because now instead of gap down double, it's gap down pull. Is there a guy in my gap? Yes. Okay, I'm back blocking on that guy. Is there a guy in my gap? No, I'm the first puller. Is there a guy in my gap? Yes, I'm back. Guy in my gap? No, now I'm the second puller. We never have more than 2 pullers. We limit it to that. And then on the back side, where it's kind of a hybrid, instead of gapping it, we will full zone the backside. So the second guy, the first guy after the second puller, now we're full zoning that thing on the backside. Where I think that defenses have done a really good job the last few years when they're playing the lighter techniques and they're trying to arm over those back blocks when there's pin and pull. And I think when you can complement it very well with power, and if you're going to arm over the back block, that's fine. We'll stay with it and we'll try to hit that thing downhill. So I think those two things can complement each other very well. You need to have a tight end. I think that's one of the big keys in pin and pull, is a tight end who can not only block back on a 6 or a head up or a 6-eye, but also sustain the block and be strong, have a great base. That's where I think the key is to being able to successfully run the pin and pull. Unless you're going to do some things where you're going to motion a receiver and crack the guy and, there's some other dynamics that you can use to do that.
Yeah, and we certainly looked at that. We did it a little bit, and usually it would be our tight end motioning in to do that. But we also do it with some bigger receivers. But, you know, for us, though, the basic part of that was, yeah, we had to have that tight end who was going to make that block. But the fun part, I think, about using gap schemes and using your quarterback is – now you can get really creative with how you dress this up and stress the defense. So, you know, what are some of the things you like to do as far as maybe motions or misdirections that really add some dynamic elements to the QB run game?
Yeah, the first thing that we talk about, you know, when we trade shift and motion quite a bit is why are we doing it? You know, is it going to benefit? Well, how's it going to benefit us? The thing about gap schemes is you can do it, and it's not going to confuse your players because of the simple rules with the gap down. But, you know, are we trading because we like the matchup better with our tight end on a particular defensive end? Or do we like the matchup better because we're trading because and we want to run away from there and Sam Mike or Will, whomever. Are we trading because, you know, they're going to get the boundary safety out of the fit? A lot of different reasons why. Same thing with emotions. You know, so many, you know, teams are playing a lot more cover one or hybrid coverage to take away the RPO stuff, that now, you know, they're exchanging people on the fly, and we're going to get guys' eyes off the fit and make them change their fits. So that's kind of the reason that we trade shift in motion. And, you know, you get people on the move, you gain leverage, you can get an extra hat at the point of attack, you can read things. You know, like, we also run power read. We're now, instead of kicking out the first man outside our in-man, we're reading the first man outside our in-man. And with motion, you kind of change some of the dynamics with who we're blocking. You know, instead of the guard pulling for the playside linebacker, he's pulling for the area of the playside linebacker. Instead of our guys going back to the backside linebacker, we're going back to the area of the backside linebacker. Because we ultimately don't know how defense is going to adjust. You know, we have an idea. But with the trade shift in motion, they're going to either bump the front, run, you know, bump the linebackers, roll the coverage. So we don't want a guard pulling for a linebacker who's running with the motion, and he'll never get there, and he's beat for the next three plays.
Coach, I want to dig into that power read a little bit. I'm trying to think back. We put that play in, I think, around 2012. And, you know, the first time we used it, you know, it was kind of just to, you know, we had a kind of a wildcat guy. We thought it'd be good with him. And we found out pretty quick, like, we just didn't know enough about it. Even though we were running the power scheme quite a bit, there were things with the read component that we felt we had to learn more about. So we studied it up. We studied a number of different teams. At the time, Northern Illinois was running it. It was really good. I think we got some film from Utah State and I want to say maybe Tennessee Chattanooga and Georgia Southern who were running it, and found like a lot of different variations. And so for us, you know, the main thing I started to see though was when you run power read, it doesn't exactly have the same demeanor of the defense as you would if you're running, you know, your downhill power game, where in the downhill power game, the fits are more vertical for the defense. Now, when you start to stretch this thing out, they start to play a little bit softer. Maybe the guy's got to come off a double team quicker because that guy's flowing, whatever it might be. There are some things that are the defense on their reactions starts to do a little bit differently that I feel you got to account for. But, you know, I was interested to hear, you know, for you guys, what, I guess, variations do you see, or how do you think about it to account for some of those things?
Yeah, I think what we really preach with, you know, if we're running it out of 10 personnel and we're using a receiver in motion and, you know, the exchange is happening between a quarterback and a receiver, your running back is a plus one defender, we tell those five guys up front, the left tackle, guard center, guard tackle, and the quarterback, hey, you guys are running power. Everyone is up here. This box is blocking for the quarterback. You're blocking power for the quarterback. We're downhill, we're vertical. That demeanor does not change. We just say you're going to the area instead of saying you've got a point is 55, that's who we're going to, right? Whether we're pulling or we're running into a three technique and we're doubling back to number seven, right? We're not going to seven. We're going to where seven is. Seven's not there anymore. Who's the next guy that's going to be there? Because of the dynamics with the motion. So we want to make sure that we really, you know, try to hit home that those U5 and the quarterback, you guys are running power. Now, everybody on the perimeter, whether it's the running back or the receivers, you're basically running jet. So you guys are blocking for the jet. You know, we tell the guy who's got the football, your hash number sidelines, get yourself four before you get 40. You know, so that crease, find that crease and hit that thing. You don't put in the ground. You know, that's how we really try to preach with the perimeter and preach with the box. Now, the dynamics, I think that's the a benefit for us keeping our rules really specific on, but we can handle a lot of different moving parts with the kind of the way that we teach it. You know, so you get what you get. You know, you're vague with your rules, and they're pretty simple. You can get your kids playing fast, but you might not always have an answer for everything.
I think one of the key components is the mesh, right? When you're running the power read is the mesh. Now, I could say for us, you know, we didn't necessarily use the jet a lot because that timing, you got to spend a lot of time on that, right, on that mesh point and the timing of it. We liked it a little bit more with the back coming across. But regardless, the mesh is very important. And what we found out early is if you don't stretch to the defender who you're basically optioning, he can defend two guys. And so to us, the key was taking the mesh point to that guy and running it off of him. What's your approach, or what do you guys coach up on that mesh?
You know, I think that every quarterback is going to be a little bit different. And you're right, the dynamics with using the motion change. So we do spend quite a bit of time on the timing aspect of it, especially if you have a guy that's a dead ball snapper or a guy who's your traditional gun snapper. I think what I've found that helps the most is, and we've drilled it before, where we put a bag in front of the quarterback, because those quarterbacks have a tendency, or not, excuse me, not like an agility bag, but like almost a hose, a barrier with the motion. You know, a guy can run on it, but he's not going to slip and fall. But that quarterback has a tendency to want to start getting downhill as he's, you know, doing his two or three shuffles, whatever it might be. We want to keep our distance from that defender so he can't play bold. And we want to make sure that we ride that thing for as long as possible width-wise. And then when we decide to, you know, when we make the decision to keep the ball as a quarterback, we want to stick our foot in the ground and ultimately still talk about getting the inside hip of the pulling guard. No different than when we are just running quarterback power, because that's what we're running. We're just adding an element of read to it. So if you decide to keep that football, you need to get to the inside hip of the guard. I think teaching the quarterback that has helped keep him away from the read player once he's made the decision to keep the football. And then if we make the decision to hand the ball to the running back or hand the ball to the jet, well, we try to have the quarterback go collision the read player, you know, to hold him so he can't try to play ball or, you know, try to get in that guy's way.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think what you see is defense will start to try to do different things to you. And it's something when we would practice this play and practice the mesh point, et cetera, you know, we'd always give these different looks. We certainly might focus on a couple based on what we saw on film, but we still wanted our quarterback to be able to work the various things. So, you know, one of those things is, you know, you hear a lot of teams about, you're going to go basically blitz the mesh point or tackle the mesh point. And that can be problematic. So how much do you see that, and what's the coaching point for your guys?
We see some of that. I mean, we see quite a bit of that. I think the thing about it is running zone read with jet, right, or running counter with jet, where if that guy goes to blow up the mesh point right now, that's fine. Now the guard's going to kick that guy out, right, the backside tight end or running back, whomever it might be, is going to pull for the play side inside linebacker. So I think the best thing for us is having something that looks similar but is a different play that we can take advantage of them blasting the mesh. I just saw in film, maybe it was like two weeks ago, I was watching cut-ups of a team that they will run quarterback power with a back offset weak, and it looks like power read. That guy's getting upfield. Now the running back kicks out that defensive end, quarterback's downhill inside hip of the guard. That was a really good change up to the power read. That's our answer, is to run something similar that takes advantage of that guy blitzing the mesh point. Then ultimately, if we do get in a situation where we are running power read and they're blitzing the mesh point, we talk to the quarterback a lot. Don't make a bad play worse. That's your number one priority. Take care of the ball. Don't make a bad play worse. And then number two, you know, ultimately, let's run power. Let's get downhill and get back to the line of scrimmage, because that thing can get a bad loss if we're handing that thing off and the defensive end can make a play on the jet. At least as a quarterback, we can get downhill and get back to the line of scrimmage and let's play the next play.
Yeah, we liked to talk to the running back, too. And again, most of ours were to the running back as the sweep guy. But really, you know, he's going to come through with eyes. And if that defensive end, if that guy we were reading, basically got on his track, you know, he knew he wasn't going to get the ball. He was going to disengage from that and basically turn into a trapper, you know. And so you have an extra guy trapping there.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's very similar to when you talk about, hey, you're on tracks. If something shows up in your track, take care of it. Whether you're possibly going to get the ball, you know, if that defensive end and the read player is up the field, well, the quarterback better be making the correct decision and taking care of the football and running downhill. And, yeah, you basically just bought yourself a counterplay.
Exactly, yeah, it does turn into a counter. I do want to step back. You know, you were talking about, you know, putting that hose in front, and that was something we experienced, too, was – you know, especially the younger quarterbacks who hadn't run it as much, was because of, you know, they want to keep the ball, get up in the line, whatever, was driving that sweeper kind of forward and changing his track. And I know the one thing we did, and I think we saw it on film maybe from, at that time, Utah State, the quarterback was basically taking a skip pull like the guard would, right? A skip pull step. So his first step was his foot away from where the sweep was going and stepping behind. And that we found that was a good little addition and coaching point to be able to keep him from, again, pushing that sweeper, pushing the mesh point up into the line where we didn't want it.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've never done that. Something to look at. What we really stress is initial alignment by the running back. So, you know, if it's the running back or it's the jet, you know, they're going to open, crossover, run, and hold that line. You're basically become the quarterback's wall. But I do really like that footwork. Hey, I looked that up, and it's something we can work on this offseason.
Yeah, I think I have some video on that. I'll include a clip in our show notes so coaches could look at that as well. But moving along, I guess the other thing, you know, looking at some things that could cause you problems. Teams that essentially want to gap exchange you and take out your pulling guard, right? So the read man, when he sees that play beginning in the backfield, just essentially turns and takes out, you know, traps, spills it, right? And you lose that guy. Again, that was something we studied and figured, okay, what are we going to do here? For us, we started to teach that guard. It was a lot like what we would teach our tight ends on, you know, any kind of naked we were running where they were getting through the backside end where we're running the naked too, and he's just ripping through him, kind of wanting him to engage, you know, getting that defensive end to think he was going to wrong arm or whatever it might be, and then just kind of slipping into the flat. Well, we kind of use that same approach with that guard. Like, we want you to make that guy commit inside, engage, and essentially take himself out of the play and still be able to wrap you up around to that backer, to that gap exchange. And so we would drill that quite a bit, and it was successful for us. But for you, you know, how do you address that problem?
You know, it's defenses are handling it the same way they started to handle zone read, just like you said, gap exchange it, you know, force the quarterback to pull it, right? And then the backside linebacker would be right there where they'll collapse the tackle. He can't climb to the will. And it's similar, just a little, you know, people are exchanging the responsibilities. But, yeah, they're going to try to collision the guard, try to pick him off, and then let the will or the linebacker run down the jet or the running back. We don't see as much of that because we do run it with motion. So now your running back's your plus player on that linebacker. But we teach it the exact same way. That guard is going to look like he's going to try to kick that guy out. He's going to spill it. He's going to slip and then climb. And we've been able to run the quarterback because of that. Just like you're saying, that guy is so, you know, bent on getting that thing spilled and try to pick off that puller that he'll throw himself down all the way to the A-gap, and the quarterback will be able to pull that thing, keep it, and we can still run power read with the quarterback keeping it, even though his read, because he's crashing down so hard. So we really do a good job of looking at that on game day in the box and saying, okay, this is how they're handling it. We can still pull this thing, even though that guy's crashing. It's a rule breaker.
The other thing I like about using the power read is the play action off of it. And it honestly for us was the simplest play action to teach, to the point where it really was, we were throwing to one guy, the pop pass. And I honestly can't tell you a whole heck of a lot what we were doing in those other parts, because we just never threw it. It was always to that tight end releasing on, you know, on a pop pass. Because you think about it, again, your safety's really worried about being out leveraged, about the ball going to the edge and being able to fit where he's supposed to in the run. Your linebackers certainly are moving towards a fit, and now you find this seam, and you know you have to be patient with it or you'll run through the window real quick, but you find the seam in the defense that you can hit with the tight end. So I guess what I'm wondering, I didn't even ask you first, is that something you guys do? Have you know, do you use the pop pass like that, play action off of the power read?
We do not use the pop pass to the tight end, but we do a lot of play action off the power read. Because we run with more jet, a lot of the stuff involves the running back. And then, you know, some exchange routes on the perimeter, or we'll do the front side pop pass to the tight end. We haven't done that for a couple of years, but we did it a few years ago, some more pop pass stuff. We usually kind of widen the tight end into a wider seam. So most of our stuff involves exchange routes with the perimeter receivers. It involves the running back, but we have in the past involved the tight end on a pop or almost a wheel.
Yeah, Coach, well, coach us through some of those, the play action. Again, for us, it was the pop, and I think I have a cut-up of that on YouTube. I'll put a link to it there. But I'm interested in what you guys do on the play action and, you know, how you're going about protecting it as well.
Yeah, so that's the key, is how do you protect it, right? For us, we like to keep a tight end in on the backside to make that as long as we can. Now the guard is going to open, pull, and kick out. Everybody else is gapping down. You're not climbing, obviously, because it's a play-action pass. You know, if we're using a motion, then more than likely we're going to get the tailback out involved in the route. Sometimes we'll exchange it, the running back will block, and then the jet guy will be involved in the route. One of the, you know, easiest ones that we've done is, you know, take the tailback and wheel him up the sideline and have the outside receiver run a post to the near safety. That's kind of been our bread and butter off of that. And then just running four verticals off of it as well has been pretty good. Well, it becomes three verticals with the motion. And then, you know, you can run a vertical out concept onto the perimeter too. But for the most part, you know, wheeling the running back out and up the sideline has been one where we've had the most success, or running using the running back to run the pop, where you guys use the tight end because you ran it with a running back. We use the running back because we run it with jet for the most part.
Yeah, I think those are two really effective and simple play actions to run. The protection, though, I think is the key to it, because when you look at that, there's really nothing that is telling you, you know, as a defender that, oh, this is going to be a pass, right? If you're reading your keys in the box, it looks like run game. It looks like maybe you're running, you know, you see the kick out, maybe it's a counter or something, but it looks like run game.
Yeah, I think the hardest part is where's your launch point for your quarterback? because like you had said, we're seeing things where people are spilling it. Well, now you're telling that guard to kick that guy out. So now where does the quarterback set up at? For us, when that guard pulls, you know, we want to get off the hip of the tackle. If that guy is going to spill it and get inside of you, that's okay. Put him in the washer with everybody else. The quarterback will then kind of set off that guard's pull. And that's a feel thing, I think, because you don't want him to look, because then his eyes aren't downfield where they need to be. You know, you want to feel where that collision is made. You know, so if the guy's really upfield, the guard's going to pull it, or the guard's going to kick it out, excuse me. So now we want to sit inside of it as a quarterback. That's why I think what's really important on the backside of the protection is keeping that backside as long as we can. Right? So your tackle's still going to step down slightly to help the center on the back block. Then the tight end's got to step down slightly to help the tight end, the tackle on the back block. But we want to make sure that we make that edge as long as we can on the backside, because our quarterback, his launch point will change based on how they're handling the guard pull and how effective the action is, like you had said before, and what we're going to do to affect that read player.
Coach, I have to ask, you know, for a team that's running the quarterback like you guys do, you always see those guys wearing, you know, a different color jersey in practice, and you can't touch the quarterback. What's your approach in practice? Now, I know for us, you know, we were typically thud like 99% of the time, right? So we let that guy be thud up in the run game. If it was pass, we just wanted guys to, you know, go by. Don't sack him. But, you know, what's your approach as far as the QB, you know, getting the look he needs when he's running the football in practice?
Yeah. We are quarterbacks in a different color jersey. Don't touch him. You know, run by him on pass, tag him off on the run, but we're not going to thud him up or any of that kind of stuff. We spend a lot of time in Indy, and I'll thud those guys up with a hand shield to give them the looks that they need, but we're not going to put any more hits on them than they have to take. This is kind of our mindset with it. I know they have helmets and shoulder pads on like everybody else, but they got to throw it too.
Coach, I wanted to touch a little bit on, you know, how you guys use the pin and pull with the quarterback run game. You know, is it just straight snap the ball and go? Or are you guys doing this off of some kind of jet sweep action away? I've seen a lot of teams actually this year, they'll go jet sweep one way, pin and pull the other, and basically separate the defense. But what's the approach for you with the pin and pull?
We do all of that. We'll separate the defense, like you said, and run jet sweep, you know, to the left, pin and pull to the right. We'll directly snap it to the quarterback and run pin and pull. We'll directly snap it to the quarterback. He'll mesh with the running back, and we'll run pin and pull. So we do a lot of different window dressings with it. We've also done it where we're going to run the jet sweep to the same side that we're running the pin and pull, you know, because we know that how they're going to rotate, and then we're going to be able to actually hit that thing downhill, right, off the second puller, but it's going to hit a lot tighter. So we'll window dress it and do it a bunch of different ways. I think it helps keep people out of the fit. It helps defensive ends on the backside. Kind of keeps them honest, and it also helps your block with your tight end as well.
Last thing I want to touch on, and you know, certainly don't want you to feel like you're giving away any secrets, but I guess tips on game planning the quarterback run game. So for coaches out there who are listening, want to use their quarterback run game more this next year, what tips do you have as far as, you know, looking at the defense, figuring out what's the package you're going to use, and maybe even fitting things together?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that I look at is, you know, how are they defending formations? That's the first thing. More importantly, how are they defending, you know, 11 personnel formations? You know, we're a tight end offense. We're in a 12 personnel, 11 personnel, 13 personnel. So, you know, for us, getting in a spread formation is getting in, you know, a tight end 3x1 or a tight end 2x2. And I specifically look at, okay, what are the safeties responsible for in the run game? What is the, you know, if you're in tight end with a 3-by-1, okay, how, okay, a lot of people take advantage of the SAM or the overhang player, you know, with bubble and RPOs and that kind of stuff, and we'll do the same things. But we'll also say, okay, how can we manipulate that guy with our quarterback run game? You know, if we're in 2-by-2 with the tight end on the ball, pro twin, now is the boundary safety in the fit, you know, or are they kicked all the way over and the will is in the fit to the field? Those are the different things that we're going to look at that will let us know, hey, how we can take advantage of quarterback run game out of certain formations. From there, you know, it's critical down and distance and it's critical field position stuff. You know, are we going to gain a hat on third and medium, third and short, and we still be able to run the football where teams are thinking that we're going to throw the football? Same thing when we get, you know, red zone, goal line, those types of things. So we look formationally, and then we look situationally as far as critical down and distances and then critical field position areas.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time here. I know you're on the road recruiting, so giving us a call from your car and talking some ball. I asked you this question at the end of the last one, but I think it's worth doing again. You know, you guys do some incredible stuff on offense. Like I said, one of the top offenses in the country. You've been recognized for the way you put it together. But, you know, with all this stuff, what is really the one thing that gives your guys the winning edge?
You know, I think that our kids understanding that they play for each other. You know, my success is your success, and your success is my success. You know, without our coaching staff believing in that, without our players believing in that, that you can't do this alone, I think is the thing that's helped us, you know, be successful, that everyone is doing it for each other because they can't get what they want without each other.
Coach, again, I appreciate you taking the time. For our listeners, if they want to connect with you, what's the best way?
Still Twitter. I haven't gone to Instagram yet. I don't know what else is out there, but I'm still pretty solid at Twitter.
And what's your Twitter handle? We'll put that in the show notes as well.
For sure. It's just at Joe and then Beschoner.
Yeah, and that's B-E-S-C-H.
C-H-O-R-N-E-R. Yep.
Correct. All right, Coach. Well, again, I appreciate you taking the time. It was great talking ball with you, and best of luck to you and the Mavericks in 2020.
Appreciate it. Always great to talk football, especially when you're on the road. It makes it go faster.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.